have a series of questions today, starting with one in red. Looks like a quickie from a Dhammadharati. He said, 3 days ago, my wife gave birth to a baby boy. According to nakshatra, name should start with D-A. We were thinking of giving him the name Danny Roy, but on different web pages, I see the same place is called differently. And then he gives three different versions of it. I'm no Sanskrit scholar, but the version that I use is Danny Roy, D-A-N-I-R-A-Y-A. That's how Danny with a H, that means a rich person. Danny means someone who's collecting. Well, Roy. And Roy with an O is not really proper. It's usually R-A-Y-A, Roy. So that's, congratulations. That's for Dhammadharati. Now, the next question comes from a Tolchandor in Sweden, who's asking a long question that I don't know if I quite got, but anyway. He works in a restaurant, and in the restaurant, obviously, they're offering everything to deities. But he said there are leftovers, and sometimes the leftovers are then mixed the next day. Either the leftovers are cooked foods, or they're cut-up foods, or they're prepared foods, but not yet cooked, but also offered. So he says we have to do this because of avoiding wastage, which is completely understandable. And how do we keep things prasadam? And obviously we can't keep re-offering what's been offered. So obviously not. I think in the case of when you're talking about having have to mix prasadam with something that's not prasadam, then you can take that initially as prasadam. I say initially because if, you know, on the first day of the restaurant's operation, you mix food with the second day, and the second day becomes prasadam, and the second with the third, and the third with the fourth, and so on up to, you know, the 25th year, and the only time you ever made an offering is on the first day, then that doesn't quite gel. But within reason, I think that that's one aspect. The other I would suggest is, for instance, when making potato sabji, and you're cut up and, you know, steamed your potatoes, don't offer them, just offer the sabji itself. Obviously, when something like sabji has already been offered and there's extra, and the next day you top it up with other things, then it's offered. But when all that's served and you're left over with cut-up things, don't offer the cut-up things. Offer them only when they're actually cooked. And I hope that sort of answers the question. Another one was from Lokabandhu. Two questions. And he's asking that when it's... he says, when I'm engaged in my service, my mind is well fixed on what I'm doing. Is that all right? Does that constitute fixing your mind on Krishna? And the answer is yes. When the motivation is right, here I am, that I'm serving Krishna, and whether it's I'm doing accounting or cooking or teaching in the school, in the Gurukul, then the principle is yes. You just pay attention to what you're doing. You focus on that. Do it the best that you can for Krishna, and that's what's called remembering Krishna. He says, but when I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I'm chanting the holy name, then my mind goes to thinking about my service. Is that all right? And the answer is no. people, yoga means yoga, Indriya Samyama, that means you control your mind and fix your mind on what it's supposed to be fixed on. Fix it on what you're doing. So when you're cooking, then don't think about accounting, then just think about cooking. When you're worshipping the deities, don't think about your children, think about the deities. When you're doing accounts, don't let your mind wander off to some other thing. Concentrate on what you're doing so that you can do your best for Krishna, and you're meant to be absorbed in what you're doing. And similarly, when you're chanting Hare Krishna, and you're meant to be hearing the chanting of the holy name. You're meant to be hearing Hare Krishna. You're not meant to be thinking about your other service. That's your service at that time. At that time, that's your service. Forget about the other services. At that time, you aren't meant to be thinking about that. His other question he's asking, in the Shikshastakam, it says that one can only chant the holy name of the Lord constantly if one is humble. He says, how does the dynamics of that work, being humble and being able to constantly chant, how does that type of qualification take place in us? Before discussing how the qualification takes place in us, let's consider this from the point of view of the holy name. The holy name manifests itself to qualify people, to those who it likes. And Krishna likes his devotees to be humble, to be meek and humble. Why? Because humility and attachment to Krishna or love have very identical or similar psychological and spiritual emotional makeup. One induces the other, or they induce each other. Let's put it that way. Love induces humility. Humility induces love. To be able to constantly chant the holy name, you have to be able to chant it with attachment. So unless you have humility, you can't have attachment. Attachment won't develop, and therefore constant chanting doesn't manifest. So on one side, it's the holy name, and what's the holy name's criterion for blessing a devotee. And then on the other is now I just mentioned, when a devotee practices, because we may have to practice humility first, we practice, for instance, these four qualities, tinadapi sunichena. When a devotee practices these four principles, and ultimately he perfects them by being humble, attachment naturally awakens. And that gives him the ability to be able to constantly chant, to be alert, to be awake, to be absorbed, not to be distracted by anything else, because he has real attachment for the holy name. That type of absorption doesn't happen any other way, unless you're attached to Krishna's name, and you can't be really attached to Krishna's name. Unless humility is there, because the lack of humility and maybe, as I mentioned, pride and other such unfavorable qualities, they block the ability for attachment, and they block the ability for constant absorption. The last question is from Shrutidhar Das in Russia, and he basically is asking, should books like Govinda Lilamrita, Krishna Bhavanamrita be translated into Russian so that qualified devotees may read them? In principle, the answer is fine. Although obviously it's not for me to say that they should be translated or who should translate them. But all books should be translated, whether someone's qualified to read them. That they should find out from their spiritual master, even when they are translated. But the goal of Krishna Consciousness Movement is to present all the books of Srila Prabhupada, all the books of the Acharyas, and actually replace the literature, the useless literature of the world, with transcendental literature. That's all our purpose. And that would include these books mentioned here, as well as so many other books, Sandarbhas, and, Puranas, Upanishads, for whatever attracts and interests people. We want to be able to give them the Vedic version, which is a theistic version, and with proper commentary we need to also have in cases. And so that people could really understand that everything that they're reading and whatever interests them is always connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yidam hi pungsas tapasas shutashala shushtasta shushtasya chaburidatayo. So like that, that everything is connected to Krishna. Yadutama shloka gunana vananam. We want books to be glorifying Krishna, whether it's on mathematics or Krishna's pastimes or history or anything, that it should be very clear that Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam, and people should be reminded of that, and they should be able to appreciate that, whatever it is that they're seeing or hearing or learning, ultimately Krishna created that thing. Krishna is connected to that thing, and it's only through Krishna that you can really understand it. Hare Krishna.